For the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary, this is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 4:26 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is August 24th. Well, the Nasdaq today posted a downside key reversal. Now, you might think that that's not really from an especially high level, but it's a big outside day, and this is particularly noticeable because it follows on from the strong open that we had in Nvidia in particular, and then lots of other shares that had followed through on the upside yesterday amid enthusiasm that we are approaching the peak of the interest rate hiking cycle, and that it was going to be all clover, or I guess very good news for everyone on the AI front. But that's an awfully big move on the downside following a gap higher in early trading. And I think it's also worth highlighting here that it's a more than 90% down day. So 94 shares down relative to 6 up and 1 unchanged. But then I think it's also especially interesting that some of the better performers yesterday were among the worst performers today. So Netflix, for example, down over 4%. But then I think it's also interesting here that it was some of the what we might consider the recession-proof type companies have been doing not particularly well. So Dollar Tree, for example, has pulled back very sharply. They have not been able to keep up with inflation. And the whole idea of having a dollar store is quickly disappearing. Then O'Reilly Automotive has been also one of the best performing shares over the course of the last decade, because on the assumption that people who can't afford to buy a new car will spend money to repair their old one. And it is still trending higher in a consistent manner, but we've had some downward dynamics inside the range, and the next big question is going to be whether it can hold the region of the 200-day moving average, which, if it comes back to that level, will coincide with the upper side of the underlying range. And then Ross Stores tends to be where people will go for discounted. Sorry, that is the wrong ticker. Discounted apparel. So the share is easing back from the peak we saw earlier this year, and it had trended higher in a really consistent manner and found support at successively higher levels all the way up from the lows in 2009. And even then, it hadn't pulled back to any great extent. But it obviously pulled back very sharply in 2020, rebounded quite impressively, and has been ranging since then. And then let's also look at other recession-proof type companies, where TJX, for example, has been trending higher in a very persistent manner, but it's a bit overbought in the short term, and it does look like we're going to see some easing. So certainly we've seen that the exceptionally low-priced product companies have experienced some pressure. Those that are selling discounts have done better. And I would say that I was in Target today for the first time in years, and it was largely empty. The share continues to trend lower and hasn't really recovered from the earnings disappointments that started to come through in the aftermath of the end of the pandemic, because they had bought entirely too much inventory. Now, as we think about the wider environment, what happens in terms of the dollar is going to have a big impact. And the dollar was in stronger territory in here today. So as we think about what's going to happen in terms of Jackson Hole tomorrow and Jay Powell's speech, and the market is beginning to think that he's going to talk about higher for longer, and that's beneficial for the dollar. So it's now testing the sequence of lower rally highs, but it is establishing itself above the 200-day moving average. Now, we had a good-sized rebound in precious metals yesterday, and gold was in positive territory today, but really only just. And silver has been really quite resurgent, but was pausing in here today as well. Now, silver in particular tends to bob around a lot, and it's a very volatile instrument. I was chatting with a subscriber today, and she opined that more often than not, silver tends to lag. But my retort is that silver tends to lag in the early part of a precious metal cycle, but then it tends to outperform and lead in the latter stages of a precious metal cycle. And we can see that graphically. When we look at silver relative to gold, then we can see that it did really quite impressively in the early part of the precious metal cycle. And I would say that the beginning of this new bull market in gold was around 2016. But from 2016 through to 2020, silver underperformed gold. Then it had a really quite remarkable rebound in 2020, and I think that was the beginning of the second psychological perception stage, which would be acceptance, that people now get the message that there is an awful lot of money that's been printed, there is no real plan for containing deficits, and the easiest way to handle that problem will be to devalue the purchasing power of currencies, and against which precious metals should advance. And that's what we've seen over the last couple of years. But there's clearly a sequence of higher reaction lows over the course of the last 12 months in particular. And silver relative to gold is now coming up to test the peaks from this year alone. So if it can sustain a move up through the peak from back in July, well, then we can start to think about silver clearly outperforming gold once more. I had the privilege to chat with the CEO of Dolly Varden yesterday. And the share price has been ranging for most of the last 7 years. And he was quite quick to highlight that he hasn't been in charge for that long. And the other point that he made was that they have done capital raisings when silver prices have been high, and they've done capital raises at successively higher levels. But the one point that was particularly relevant that he said was that the majority of the junior silver miners have an all-in sustaining cost of about $20. Well, silver is currently trading around $24, and that's up about a dollar over the course of the last week or two. Well, in the event that they're making $3 on every ounce that they produce, well, if the price goes to $26, then they've just doubled their profitability. And that helps to highlight just how leveraged some of these smaller companies are. Now, of course, Dolly Varden is a late-stage explorer rather than being a producer. But one thing that is interesting is that it's right next door to Hecla Mining up in northern British Columbia. And Hecla could potentially buy the company. Now, that's not inside information because that's not what the CEO said, but he did say that it was potentially closer to an acquisition than at any point in the past, and that they have rebuffed hostile interest in the company before. Now, Hecla bounced from the $4 area in here this week, and it's really quite oversold in the short term. So there's certainly the potential for some additional upside here. And then the gold miners ETF, having pulled back quite sharply over the last month, was in positive territory in here this week as well. So at least beginning to show some signs of support coming through in the region of the lows from back in February of this year. Now, when we think then about what's the other big news story that's going on right now, well, the BRICS meeting is going on in South Africa. So, the first thing I think is important is that BRICS GDP is currently around 6%, and that's give or take around the average. But then let's look at the BRICS CPI, and I think this is really quite telling that the CPI for the BRICS is at 1.25%. So we've seen a lot of inflationary pressures in the Western world. So I'm just going to refer to the Western world as the OECD. And now we have the BRICS Consumer Price Index at 1.25%. So not only has it been trending downwards over the last decade, but it's at a new low. And I think this is also helping to highlight that several decades ago, inflation was a serious problem in the region, and it has been improving steadily over the course of the last 20 years. So now the bigger question is, what's going to happen next? Are we going to have a deflationary environment, or how much of this is occupied by what's going on in China? And all of this talk about creating special drawing rights, or the potential at least that we might have a new gold-backed currency, I think the more likely scenario is that there will be a lot more support for bilateral trade with China, and China trade links with the other BRICS members is somewhere in the region of about 75%. So what that also I think helps to highlight is that this is really a China plus club. And China's 10-year yield is at 2.5%, and not rallying. So we had at least a rebound yesterday in the Hang Seng, and the potential is that it is going to give some of that up tomorrow. If we look at the futures, the Hang Seng is down about 80 or 80 basis points, 0.8%, and in the futures market, the Nasdaq having been down over 2%, the Nikkei is down 1.75%. So my instinct has been to be bearish over the course of the last couple of months, and most particularly of Apple, simply because they have a 3-year product cycle, and there isn't going to be a rush of new sales until at least 2024. So that would suggest that earnings are probably going to disappoint in 2023. And I think that there is the clear potential that it is going to fully unwind the overbought condition relative to the 1,000-day moving average. And that would be quite normal. Now, with the dollar a bit steadier, then there will be more than concentration on currencies that are weakening against it. The pound was down in a fairly dynamic manner yesterday, and it has failed to sustain the move above 130, and it's coming back in to test the region of the 200-day moving average. And the UK is trading at a fairly significant discount on a valuation basis. But then we also have the FTSE 250 that is holding so far in the region of the 18,000 level, but it's not especially convincing. Now, the property prices, or property asking prices in the UK, are falling, and inflationary pressures have been sticky. So the Bank of England isn't going to be the first central bank to cut interest rates. And if the Federal Reserve is going to be higher for longer, then it's likely that the Bank of England will also be higher for longer. So there is the potential then that the 18,000 level isn't going to hold, that we're going to see a deeper process of consolidation. I would like to then also think about some of the commodities. There's been an especially warm summer in much of the USA, and that has put some pressure on crops. But Prices have been falling, and most particularly in wheat, because of alternative routes for export for the Ukrainian crop. So we have the corn price that is has been trending downwards now for a year. It's oversold in the short term, and if there's any crop damage as a result of the very hot weather and lack of rain in much of the south of the USA, well, it's not readily apparent in corn prices. But perhaps it is more evident in cotton prices, and cotton is beginning to steady here, and it's been in this really quite tight range now for the last 10 months, and that was following a fairly significant decline. So we have it firming now from the region of the 200-day moving average. Now there's a tropical storm about to hit southern Texas and drop some rain on Houston. Well, for a city that's accustomed to hurricane-like conditions, they're not going to blink at the volume of rain that's likely to fall. But one thing that I've seen, at least from some of the reports, is that the rain isn't going to go far enough inland to put some moisture on top of the cotton crop. So there's the potential here that prices could break on the upside, and there is a backwardation in place. Now, it's not an especially large one, but the backwardation suggests that there is a near-term supply deficit, so we could have some additional upside here. Then, one I think point that is, I think, not being discussed particularly in the media is that we've had plenty of examples of commodity prices popping on the upside. So, cocoa prices have been absolutely resurgent and are really now just pausing in the region of the peak from back in 2015. Now, there was a big downside weekly key reversal 3 weeks ago, but we haven't seen follow through just yet. Now, obviously, there is a risk that we will see some follow through. Then, the sugar price has also been really quite firm, and it is consolidating and has bounced from the region of the 200-day moving average over the last couple of months as well. Then the orange juice price has barely looked back since the orchards were destroyed by a hurricane in Florida last year, and the price is still holding here around the $3 level. Now, the magnitude of the storm that hit Southern California this year was not, or excuse me, this week was not high enough to inflict any real damage on the California crop. So we may see at least some pause in consolidation starting to come through in there. But of course, within the commodity markets, it's what happens in oil is going to have the biggest effect on the perception of inflationary pressures. And the oil price has been quite volatile over the last couple of days, and now it's back in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and this still looks like a consolidation above the 200-day moving average. But the argument is quite, I think, balanced. On the one hand, you have slowing economic growth and tight monetary conditions. And then on the other, you have OPEC, where they are actively trying to withdraw supply from the market. And eventually, one or the other is going to win out, and we're going to see a more impressive move. But if the bulls are going to be given the benefit of the doubt, then the price will have to hold the $80 level. If it fails to hold that move, then this will look like a less consistent downtrend, but still a downtrend overall, or at least a more volatile period of support building would be underway. So, as we then think about where are we in this cycle, well, I think what we are more likely than not to see is much more volatile action. We have the 10-year yield is pausing around the region of the peak from late last year, and it was in positive territory in here today. If the Federal Reserve goes for higher for longer, that's going to further restrict access to liquidity. Then we will see earnings beginning to take a to experience pressure or a toll taken on earnings, and stock markets will sell off. Then we know that there are several challenges that are going to appear in the third quarter, and it's about time that the stock market should start to price in that. We know that mortgage rates are still very high and rentals are exceptionally expensive. We know that there are going to be 40 million people going to start repaying their student loans in October. And then, of course, we also know that the delinquencies on some on vehicle loans are starting to tick higher, and that credit card usage has already started to increase. So these are all evidence of tightening activity among consumers. And I think it is quite natural that we should anticipate that that is going to take a toll on earnings. It would potentially then create demand for bonds as a hedge, because if earnings decline, that's going to accelerate the potential that we'll have more of a deflationary environment. Then there are lots of people that I've been speaking to, particularly institutions, where they have a lot of their money in cash or money market funds, and they're more than happy to earn 5% and not take any risk in the stock market. So there's a ton of money that's sitting on the sideline. But that money is sitting on the sideline because they don't want to pay these historically high valuations for stocks. And it's not likely to be encouraged back into the market until interest rates come down and erode that guaranteed return, and valuations are more attractive, which would make the forward potential for earnings more impressive from a new investor's initial position. That suggests to me that prices go up, go down first, and that encourages central banks to start cutting interest rates. Some of the money comes in off the sidelines, and we get a recovery. And I think this is the kind of environment we're going to have, that it's going to be choppy. We're going to have big moves on the upside, big moves on the downside, and the interest rate environment is going to be more choppy as well. And I think the most likely scenario is that when they cut interest rates, it will not be as aggressive as it has been in the past, and rates are not going to stay down for as long as they have in the past. And it's more likely that they will, that central banks have been chastened by the resumption of inflationary pressures, and they're not going to take any risks about leaving liquidity and rates low for a prolonged period. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.